You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Benjamin Netanyahu is going to speak and the United States Embassy opening in Jerusalem, where we've had an annex. I want to say approximately 50 people have been shot and killed where Gaza butts up against the Israeli border so far today. So I just wanted to play some of the comments by Mr. Netanyahu. Jared Kushner spoke for the United States, the president's son-in-law, he said it's time that we try something better. It's time that we try something different. Successive presidents have vowed to do this and didn't do it. Donald Trump the first. So here's Bibi Netanyahu.
President Rivlin, Yoshev Rosh HaKnesset, Rayato, Sarim, Chavre Knesset, Rosh Iriyat Yerushalayim, Yoshev Rosh HaOppozitsia, Secretary Mnuchin, Deputy Secretary John Sullivan, Jason Greenblatt and Naomi, and your family, Ambassador David Friedman and Tammy, and your family, senators and members of Congress, and the governor of Florida, we have no better friends in the world. You stand for Israel, and you stand for Jerusalem. Thank you.
The laughter was Steve, as we would pronounce it in, the Secretary of Commerce, or the Treasury, Mnuchin, as we would say it. He said it in the Hebrew pronunciation, which got a laugh from everybody.
Rabbanim, the chief rabbis of Israel, the distinguished rabbis who are here, the pastors, the ministers, the many friends who have come here from around the world, the many friends who have prayed for this day and have worked for this day, thank you all. And, of course, I want to especially welcome Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. Your presence here today is a testament to the importance of this occasion, not only for the Trump administration, but in a very personal way for you. For you, each of you, for the pursuit of peace, and for President Trump himself. Thank you. Dear friends, what a glorious day. Remember this moment. This is history. President Trump, by recognizing history, you have made history. All of us are deeply moved. All of us are deeply grateful. For me, being here brings back wonderful memories from my childhood. Gadalti po, ad gil shalosh. Hayti holech po basadot ad gvul yadua, ki po haya asur lalechet yoter, ze kvar haya mesukan. Velachen ze yom gadol. יום גדול לירושלים, יום גדול למדינת ישראל, יום שיחרט בזיכרוננו הלאומי לדורות. So I know some of you didn't follow every word I said in Hebrew, and I'll tell you that I spent the first 3 years of my life in this neighborhood, and in Getty Street in Talpiot, which is not very far away, There were a few charming houses here, many open fields. I remember ambling in these fields with my brother Yoni. He was 6, I was 3. He held my hand very tight. We'd walk to this wondrous house of Professor Joseph Klausner, the renowned Jewish historian, who was my father's teacher. I used to peer through the slats of the wooden synagogue where he and the great Israeli writer Shai Agnon used to pray on Shabbat. And David, I would approach this place right here, but only so far, because my mother told me, you can't go any further. This was near the border. It was exposed to sniper fire. That was then. This is now. Today, the embassy of the most powerful nation on earth, our greatest ally, the United States of America, today its embassy opened here.
Wow.
What a difference. What a difference. So for me, this spot brings back personal memories. But for our people, it evokes profound collective memories of the greatest moments we have known on this city on a hill. In Jerusalem, Abram passed the greatest test of faith and the right to be the father of our nation. In Jerusalem, King David established our capital 3,000 years ago. In Jerusalem, King Solomon built our temple, which stood for many centuries. In Jerusalem, Jewish exiles from Babylon rebuilt the temple, which stood for many more centuries. In Jerusalem, the Maccabees rededicated that temple and restored Jewish sovereignty in this land. And it was here in Jerusalem, some 2,000 years later, that the soldiers of Israel spoke 3 immortal words, Ha Habayit Bi'adenu, the Temple Mount is in our hands. Words that lifted the spirit of the entire nation. We are in Jerusalem and we are here to stay. We are here in Jerusalem protected by the brave soldiers of the Army of Israel, led by our Chief of Staff, Gadi Eisenkot, and our brave soldiers are protecting the borders of Israel as we speak today. We salute them all. And the members of our security forces, the Shin Bet, the Mossad, whose head is with us today. We salute you all of you. We gather here today to celebrate another historic day in the life of this city, which I know will take its place alongside other momentous decisions in the history of our people. Over a century ago, the Balfour Declaration recognized the right of the Jewish people to a national home in this land. And exactly 70 years ago today, President Truman became the first world leader to recognize the newborn Jewish state. Last December, President Trump became the first world leader to recognize Jerusalem as our capital. And today, the United States of America is opening its embassy right here in Jerusalem. Thank you. Thank you, President Trump, for having the courage to keep your promises. Thank you, President Trump, and thank you all for making the alliance between America and Israel stronger than ever. And thank you, a special thank you, to you, Ambassador Friedman. Thank you, David, for everything you do to bring our countries and our peoples closer together. Today, you have a special privilege. You are privileged to become the first American ambassador to serve your country in Jerusalem, and this is a distinct honor that will be yours forever. Nobody can be first again. Thank you, David. My friends, this is a great day for Israel. It's a great day for America. It's a great day for our fantastic partnership. But I believe it's also a great day for peace. I want to thank Jared, Jason, and David for your tireless efforts to advance peace and for your tireless efforts to advance the truth. The truth and peace are interconnected. A peace that is built on lies will crash on the rocks of Middle Eastern realities. You can only build peace on truth. And the truth is that Jerusalem has been and will always be the capital of the Jewish people, the capital of the Jewish state. Truth, peace, and justice. As our justice here, Hanan Meltzer, can attest, truth, peace, and justice. This is what we have. And this is what we believe in. The prophet Zechariah declared over 2,500 years ago, Koa amar Adonai, Shavti el Tzion, Veshachanti betoch Yerushalayim, Venikrea Yerushalayim ir ha'emet. So said the Lord, I will return to Zion, and I will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem shall be called the city of truth. May the opening of this embassy in this city spread the truth far and wide, and may the truth advance a lasting peace between Israel and all our neighbors. God bless the United States of America, and God bless Jerusalem, the eternal, undivided capital of Israel. Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, shechiyanu vekiymanu vehegiyanu lazman hazeh. Thank you very much.
There you have the Prime Minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu, on a jubilant day in Jerusalem. And I would just, how much security is in that city today? And so very, 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 very interesting day, and a day that's, again, with violence on the border with Gaza.
Good morning to you, Adam.
Interesting stuff. So, good morning to you here on a Monday morning. It's a big day for the United States, as this has been something that president after president campaigned on and yet never did because of, quote-unquote, the realities on the ground. So Donald Trump doesn't roll like that, essentially. And so today you have his son-in-law there, his daughter there, in what I'm sure for them is an incredibly historic and experience, being able to represent the United States at an event like this. The Middle East has been a problem since I was a child. It'll be a problem after I'm no longer here. It is amazing, though, how the fact that we have United Nations, we have all these different organizations that are supposedly committed to peace, yet we can't seem to find peace. I also think it's interesting when you study history and whatnot, and it dovetails off something that Bibi Netanyahu said, and that is the truth. What is the truth in the Middle East? You know, Jerusalem doesn't belong to Israel. Jerusalem belongs to everybody. Does Rome belong to everybody because the Catholic Church is headquartered there? No. Does Mecca belong to everybody? No, it belongs to the Saudis. So, again, this notion that somehow or other, you know, Israel doesn't own Jerusalem is, again, until you at least embrace reality, can you go further? I don't think you can. My own opinion. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am in this case. So, good morning to you here on Monday, the 14th day of May in the year 2018. Mike McNamara with you. We will, happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. All you moms out there that are listening, happy Mother's Day. Hope you had a good Mother's Day. I thought a bit about my mom yesterday, who passed away. How many years ago is it now? 4 years ago, I think. And what a, I don't, there's nobody on the planet who had a more profound effect on me, growing up. My mom, encouraged and fed my reading. I was, as a little kid at St. Charles Borromeo Elementary School. My mom fed my appetite for reading. Fed it, she created it, encouraged me to read, bought me books, blah, 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 blah. And so it was Kathleen, my mother, Kathleen McNamara, who was the most instrumental person, for me in terms of my development as a, as a young guy who, as a little kid, and then I remember, I would come home with my Scholastic, you know, when I was a kid, they would hand you out, it was called the Scholastic Book Club, and you would get a handout, at the start of the year. And then the nuns would tell you, you have until, you know, so if they gave us out the flyer at the start of school, let's just say that was September 5th. Okay. You have 2 weeks to get this back in with your check and your book order. So you'd go home, I'd circle all these books, and they were all sports of World War II or some other history. And I read about Lincoln and Jefferson and Washington and Francis Scott Key and Nathaniel Hale. I regret that I have but one life to give for my country, he said before the Brits hung him for being a spy. So I read all that stuff, and it was my mom who encouraged me. In fact, not far from me, sitting on a bookshelf, are books that she bought me in a drugstore. Yeah, there was a drugstore next to the supermarket that we went to. We went to a supermarket called Vans on the corner of East Parkway and Florin Road in Sacramento. And a guy my dad was teammates with, my dad, a baseball player, by the name of Tony Stathis. The Stathis brothers worked there because the family owned it. So we'd see Tony and Gus. They're Greeks. They have names like that. So anyway, at the store. And then next to the store was a drugstore. And they had these books about the Civil War. And they were like, I don't know, 5 inches by 4 inches. You know, just kind of small kids' books. And there was one for the Union. and one for the Confederacy. And my mom bought those for me, and I read them. And but probably the thing, the book that she bought the most for me, that I used to stare at all the time, was, and it's kind of interesting. Well, hold on, let me grab it. Give me like 10 seconds. Okay, it's not there. I'll find it during the break. But I know that's unprofessional as hell. But it was a book about the Civil War, right? And it was about and it had these illustrations on it. That's why I have to find it, because I'll explain one of their illustrations. It had. The illustration had the terrain. It had obvious, so it had all the pitch, all the names of the terrain on it. It had, it had formations of Union troops and Confederate troops, and then it would have this kind of paragraph with numbers in it. So number one is, the wheat field at Antietam. Number two is, now Gettysburg's easier because more people have heard it. So number one is the fight to the west of the city, right? And so, you see the terrain. And so it was this three-dimensional look at the battlefield. And most maps, didn't have that. So when you're a little kid and you could look at it and you could see it, I mean, it was as good as, I mean, that's as close as it was going to come alive until Ted Turner made his movie about Gettysburg. But it gave you a set. You could look at the map. You could look at the terrain. It was all three-dimensional. And it had, the little paintings of soldiers and, different people and things like that. So it was very cool. So that I was fascinated by that as a kid. I was fascinated by that stuff. And so every couple weeks, every month, my mom would buy books for me from the Scholastic Book Club. And then what would happen is we'd get this box, and so the nuns would open it, and you would have, your order with the books that you bought in them. That used to be awesome. I'd look at these books, Day of Infamy about Pearl Harbor, Guadalcanal Diary, and it was this whole series of fighting in the Pacific, and that's how I was introduced to the Marine Corps. Was in these books, Wake Island, and I started reading about Marines on Wake Island, and Marines on Battle for Midway. I read all that stuff. So, and my mom encouraged all of it. And when I was, and she always encouraged me to be a leader. I wish I knew how you create leaders. I don't know how you do. I think you could encourage it. And she did. But I was my own little, it made sense to me when to put my hand up in first grade when they said, who wants to run for class officers? I looked around and I was like, I think that's me. That should be me. Yes. Of course it should be. Right. I don't know. And where does that come from? Where does that come from in a kid? I don't rightly know. I wish I did. If I did, I would bottle it up and I'd sell it and help you make little leaders around the world. But my mom encouraged all that. Encouraged all that. And she never got too mad at me when I used to get muddy and filthy dirty at school, because I like that. I like getting dirty. In fact, we used to play, get filthy muddy. I don't even know, like, how the nuns allowed this, but, and we liked it. It was when this one, we played, we used to call it Socky. It was a cross between soccer and hockey, so it was soccer, but you could check. How fun would that be? Yeah, so we called it Socky. So we played soccer, but you could check. And when this one field that they let us play in, it would get, when there got to be a little bit of rain, we'd still play. We'd be filthy. I'd come home, Kathleen would look at me. And again, I'm wearing black slacks and a pair of black leather shoes and white collared shirt, short sleeve or long sleeve. Somehow, it depended on the time of the year. You could wear either one. Long sleeve, come on. I'd rather wear my green sweater. And green sweater, yeah, you'd get your uniform green sweater and black bow ties for church on Friday. And so, I was used to discipline as a kid. Nuns, man, they tolerated no bullshit or very little. They tolerated some. And so, but my mom, Kathleen, taught me how to sew so I could sew my buttons back on my G.I. Joe stuff when it got ragged because I was a squared away little kid. So I was doing yard work yesterday thinking about what an incredible influence my mom was on me, and my mom was about discipline too. I'd get pissed at something. I'd have the red ass as like a 10-year-old. She picked me up from baseball. I've told the story before, but I'll tell it again. I get in the car and I'm pissed. My dad's a catcher, right? I know how to catch, and I want to be a catcher because my dad was a catcher. And smart guys are catchers. Smart guys, tough guys are catchers. So that was me. And I get in the car, and Mr. Batson, my coach, was a Red Star Laundry delivery driver. And he, you know, I don't think he ever played baseball. He didn't play too much baseball. But he was our coach. And so with runners on base, your position's different. You're just not down in a squat, right? You're kind of up a little bit so you can throw. And so you can move and block pitches. So I'm doing this, and Mr. Ron Batson says, Mike, don't do that. And I said, but Mr. Batson, he said, yeah, I don't want you to do that. I don't like all that moving around. I think it distracts the pitcher. So I get in the car. Now, I go to school with the nuns, and I have fairly strict parents. Kathleen, corporal punishment Kathleen, as she was known. She was not afraid. Get the bar of soap out if you were experimenting with profanity. Don't ask me how I know that, but I do. Yeah, and it wasn't just like some like curved bar of Cam-A that would slide easily in and out of your mouth. It was the block of ivory that had all kinds of trouble getting into your mouth because of those right angles, and she'd rake that shit on your teeth. Oh, yeah, Mr. Want to say dirty words with that filthy mouth? Yeah, shit talking me while she's cramming that bar of soap in and out of my mouth. Can you imagine if you did that today? Yeah, now you just have to use liquid. Open your mouth. Chew that stuff. There you go. Yeah, today if you did that, oh my God, you'd be on TV. All the time, man. Not all the time, but on more than one occasion, Kathleen got me. But... Yeah, so Mr. Batson, he tells me not to do it, so I, of course, don't do it. I get in the car and pissed, and she picks me up smoking her Parliament cigarettes in our maroon-colored Bonneville. And it was the first car we ever had that had air conditioning. That was a big step up. Yeah, we had a station wagon. We drove it to Dallas, and that sumbitch died. It died a slow, agonizing death. We used to call it the Good Ship Lollipop. Don't ask me why. That's what we called the station wagon. I put it neutral with my sister somewhere behind me or somewhere near me and almost killed her when I was, I don't know what age. It was my jet pilot. Yeah. So, I don't know, I pushed something up against it, I climbed in the window, because that's what jet pilots do, and my sister was running around outside, I threw the station wagon, the Good Ship Lollipop, it was white with a little bit of red and blue on it, And I threw that thing in neutral, rolled it right in the street. That's right. Rawr! Kathleen came out. She was none too pleased, let me tell you. Again, that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger, okay? She was not successful killing me that day. But she wanted to. So, anyway, I get in the car, the red Bonneville. She's smoking, and I'm pissed. She looks at me, she says, what's wrong? So this is like 1966. Okay? Yeah, because we went to Dallas in 65. That's when we would have got the red Bonneville. I would have been 9 in 1966, because when I was 10, I made majors, and Mr. Batson wasn't my coach. Oh, you know what? He was my coach in majors. I played for the Yankees. But we didn't have cool Yankee uniforms. They were green. They were white with green trim and had the little Yankee kind of patch on it. Yeah. And we had a green hat with a Y on it. Yeah. But I was on the Yankees. But anyway, I get in the car. So it'd be like 1967. I'm 10 years old. And she looks at me. She says, what's wrong? I said, Mr. Batson doesn't know what he's doing. Smoking her cigarette. Really? Pulling out into traffic on G Parkway. We were practicing at Parkway Elementary School in Sacramento. So Kathleen's driving, talking to me. She said, what did he do? And I said, well, with runners on base, I'm supposed to do this and catch like this. Dad taught me how to do it. And he doesn't know anything about catching. He doesn't know that much about baseball. And I'm going off on my coach. Kathleen, she said, who's the coach of your baseball team? And I look over, like, confused, like, what do you mean? Mr. Batson. She said, okay, Mr. Batson's a coach. When he tells you to do something, you do it. Do you understand me? Now, when Kathleen went into the do you understand me mode, there was like one response to that, okay, and that was in the affirmative. Yes, Mom. She said, then she would double down on it. And if you think your father would say to disobey your coach, then you don't know your father. So you do what he tells you. Do you understand? Or you won't play. Yes, ma'am. End of discussion. Boom. You want to be a punk? You got treated like a punk. So Kathleen was on my shit. She wasn't on my shit. She was a great mom. And she bought me G.I. Joe stuff because we'd go away for the summer and I had three sisters. I didn't have anybody to play with. So I spent a lot of time with my G.I. Joes. Playing dolls and with my guys. Yeah, I had a few of them, and that's when they were big. Yeah, get them dressed. And she bought me all kinds of stuff for that. She bought me the airplane. She bought me the guy, the Navy guy, the deep sea diver. Yeah, I'd be in the bathtub. I'd be playing, you know, with him in the bathtub. But she always read, and my mom was big on treating people well. If you didn't treat people well, that's why she didn't like my dad's friends. She didn't like my dad's friends. They were drinkers, right? And they were baseball guys, you know? If you weren't a baseball guy, they didn't have time for you. Well, my mom's dad was a professor at the University of Washington, John Vivian Forden. He was anything but a baseball guy. He was an academic. He rode. He did. He ran marathons. You know, he was a hiker. He was like anything but. So she was raised different. My mom didn't graduate from college. She got married and left. And so baseball guys, she did not suffer well because she didn't feel they treated other people well. So, but she was death on that. Absolutely, positively death on that. And, So anyway, yesterday, so I was doing yard work yesterday thinking about my mom and how probably more than any other person on the planet, my mom kind of laid the foundation for my life, you know. And I, when I, you know, and I'd run for office as a, in high school, whether it be home or president, or I'd run, you know, I was stuff in student body. I mean, my mom would always be asked about it, you know, never got in my business, but always, you know, encouraged me and didn't really kind of get too much into my business. As long as I was between the left and right lateral limit, Kathleen left me alone. And that was even with constantly being, you know, student achieving below apparent capability. She would get into me, but I was a good enough student where I could not try very hard and still do okay. And she knew it. But she, like, I did a report on the United States Naval Academy. It never really occurred to me that I could, like, try to go there, but I did a report. Back in the day when you'd have to write and, write them for information. And I did. And they sent me this packet of information, you know, about us, and they sent me all these little pamphlets about the Naval Academy. I was so excited when that stuff came, and I wrote my paper about the Naval Academy. And but she always encouraged that stuff to me. I can't remember what year, but the movie Tora, Tora, Tora came out. I could find out very quickly. But my mom, and it premiered on December 7th. Of that year. If you've never seen the movie, it's a movie about the attack on Pearl Harbor. It came out in 1970. So my mom, took me to the premiere at the Alhambra Theater in Sacramento, California. The Alhambra Theater was this ornate theater, you know, a tribute to the 30s with big grounds, lush gardens that you walk through to go to the theater. All green stuff, and then it had the curving balconies, and so, you know, the burgundy curtains and all of that chandelier, in Sacramento. And so she and I got dressed up. She, my mom, very very classy woman, and she like threw her dress on and all of that. Yeah, do a search on Alhambra Theater, Sacramento, California, and you'll see this kind of ornate theater with trees and whatnot. And if you click on one of the inside pictures, yeah, it was like the theater, big stuff. So anyway, we go and she takes me to see Tora, Tora, Tora. You know why? Because that's what I loved as a little kid, you know. And so it was her night with me. And I remember when I decided to join the Marine Corps, my parents had very different reactions to it. I was working at Merrill Lynch in Los Angeles, and I called her. And we were talking, and she said, we're chit-chatting, and I said, I'm thinking about changing jobs. She said, oh, really? And I said, yeah. She says, well, what do you think you want to do? And I said, I'm thinking about joining the Marine Corps. Now, my father, when I told him, he said, those idiots can't pour piss out of a boot. I was like, what? Why are we going there, dog? My dad's an Army guy, so dog would have been appropriate for him. Jealous, typical. So my mom's response was, I think you'll do well. I think you'll love it. And I was a little surprised, to be honest with you. I thought that she would be a little bit more concerned about her only son. But you know what? But it was... It was, you know, my mom, and she knew me, And she knew, you know, that I think I would enjoy it. But so anyway, so all you moms out there, I had my mom was in my head yesterday as I was doing yard work, something I hated doing with her. When we built a house after my dad got to the big leagues, my mom, you know, designed the house and all that. And then she designed the landscaping. Ugh, my God. Olive trees. So the place we moved was called the Olive Orchard. And it had all these olives. You had to rake the olives. They were everywhere. Yeah. So anyway, and then the other thing Kathleen was big on, weeding the flower beds. I hated weeding flower beds. Could not stand it. Could not stand it. But I'd be out there, mowing the lawn and weeding the flower beds. Hating it. Kathleen would get out there. She'd be walking through, smoking a cigarette. See some weeds. She'd hop in there and pull those weeds out. Throw them on the walkway. Michael, would you pick those up? I'm like, yes, Bob. So, anyway, my mom, Kathleen McNamara. Kathleen, actually, she was Mary Kathleen Forden is her maiden name. And Kathleen, and then I went by Kathleen, changed it. Yeah. Kathleen Mary McNamara. And so I just saw one of my report cards. She used to sign her name, which was a custom back in the day, Mrs. John McNamara. So I posted my report cards on Facebook, and this thing I do, that little thing that friends of mine from grammar school put up. I said, yeah, not sure how I got these bad grades in conduct, but whatever. And then one of the girls posted, I think it's really cool and kind of a symbol of the time, the way your mom signed her name. And my mom had great penmanship. So anyway, to all you moms out there, happy Mother's Day. All right. We'll check the news here coming up. And then I want to play General Kelly's. I want to play General Kelly's remarks. He was on NPR last week, White House Chief of Staff, retired Marine General. So I want to play those for you. His remarks have created a little bit of controversy. That'll shock you, right? And then I want to talk a little bit about Butch Neal, who's coming on the program maybe tomorrow. We'll record the interview this afternoon. His book is entitled What Now, Lieutenant? Butch Neal got sent away from home at the age of 9 because his dad was drunk, and I don't know how if he was physically abusive with his mother, but he stepped between his mother and father one night and told his father, if you're going to do anything to her, then you're going to have to fight me. So his father, I guess, was struggling at work, and then so he got sent away to live with some relatives with his uncle in New Hampshire. And he learns responsibility like he didn't know it on a farm. Comes back about a year, maybe 18 months later, and moves back in with his parents, and everything kind of proceeds till his father passes away when he's probably around 14 or 15, and he goes to work as a garbage man, a trash man, as he says it. I don't know why he doesn't use the word garbage man, but he goes to work as a trash man. He'll work as a trash man for the next 6 years of his life. And so he puts himself through college, and just about everybody was in the military, so he decides that probably military not a bad thing for him to do. And he'll join as an officer. So he's going to Northeastern University, working on becoming a teacher. And so he's looking at Army ROTC, and he's looking at this program the Marine Corps has called PLC. PLC could do it twice, and it's only 6 weeks, so that means he doesn't have to miss as much work, a full month less of work, which fits into his schedule better. So that's the reason he becomes a Marine. Awarded the Silver Star in Vietnam as second lieutenant. And a thing we did last week, if you haven't listened to it, it's what's called, there's an article written. It's called Gitlin's Corner. There's a link to it, in the story, in the podcast. Yeah. So I put up some cool links with it. But General Neal goes from second lieutenant to the assistant to become the assistant commandant of the Marine Corps. Yeah. Pretty interesting career, right? During that period of time, he comes home. He's at the Marine Barracks in Boston. He's a casualty assistance officer during Vietnam. He goes back as an advisor. He's part of the Marine Corps during General Wilson, Commandant Wilson, his expeditious discharge program, when we had drugs and racism rampant in the Marine Corps, right? He becomes an aide to the Assistant Commandant of the Marine Corps, a general by the name of Sam Jaskilka. Yeah, he goes back as an instructor at the Amphibious Warfare School. He goes to be a battery commander. And then he goes to CENTCOM as a major. After he does his time at CENTCOM, and CENTCOM's nothing, right? The Middle East is nothing to the United States. What are the two theaters where the United States has great interest? The Pacific, obviously. Korea out there. Vietnam, still out there. And Europe. Those are the two commands. Middle East, nothing. Leaves there, goes to be the CO of Amphibious Warfare School. He's already crossed paths with General Gray. And there, you know, he gets involved in the whole maneuver warfare discussion. He's the CO of Amphibious Warfare School. When I was out at the basic school, he was at Amphibious Warfare School. General Van Riper was the president of Marine Corps University. In fact, I wonder if he's there the night that Zinni does his little talk, because he's mentioned in the talk. Because he went to the basic school with General Zinni. Anyway, he's at PP&O as a brigadier general when Desert Storm starts, when Iraq invades Kuwait. And so there's a request by the Joint Staff for an operations focused brigadier general. And Gray tells him that I'm going to nominate you. He then becomes a bit of a legend because they can't find a briefer who General Powell, Secretary of Defense Cheney, right, who everybody liked, to include the president, President Bush. Neal stands up there, and he crushes it. He becomes the face of the operations briefs for Operation Desert Storm, Desert Shield. So it's interesting to hear him talk about, you know, working with General Schwarzkopf and all of what he did. And then how to keep the ground war synchronized, and then the aftermath. As a Vietnam veteran coming home, right, he threw out the first pitch at Fenway Park. He conducted the Boston Symphony on July 4th. He spoke at his high school, right? He becomes a mini celebrity. He then goes and becomes a deputy, the deputy CG of 2MEP. He then becomes the commanding general of the 2nd Marine Division. How about that? Then he goes to CENTCOM again as the deputy CG. And from there, he becomes the assistant commandant of the Marine Corps, and then and now he's retired. So Butch Neal, you'll probably hear from him tomorrow, and we'll record the – but, you know, so, okay, given all that, if you're going to do somewhere between an hour to 90-minute interview, how do you do it? Right? How do you distill that into 90 minutes something that, right, something that is, you know, not simply walking through the book. The book is a point of departure for a discussion about other things. He says some pretty, I'm interested in his thoughts on post-combat related mental health. Because at the end of the book, he talks about his duty. He lives a couple miles now, today, from the Vietnam Wall. And it's become a special place. I want to say panel 17, row 70, are the names of his comrades from India Company 39. And he tells a story in the final chapter. And I'll read it to you. This is a postscript, right, to the final chapter. Talk about the walks I take to the wall help keep alive the memories of those we lost. I once read a book about Vietnam that said those who survived have a solemn responsibility to remember and keep alive the memory of those who died. I agree. This obligation is probably why I ultimately decided to stay in the Marine Corps, not only not to forget those who died, but just as importantly, to do my damnedest to try to ensure that future Marines do not have to experience a Gitlin's Corner because of poor leadership. Postscript. Recently, as was my custom, I stopped at the Vietnam Wall just to see the names and think for a few minutes about my brothers. General Neal's a big-time runner. Boston Marathon guy, Marine Corps Marathon, multiple times. He's one of those guys who you hated, right? Just a natural runner. As I stood in front of panel 17E, looking at the 15 names all clustered around row 70, a little elderly lady, a grandmother type, comma, my age, close parenthetical, moved almost in front of me. I was about to step back to give her more room when I realized she was one of the volunteers that helped people at the wall find names and learn the history. She was polite and said she was looking for row 70. I pointed it out to her and asked, "What name are you looking for?" John Bobo. Her eyes hadn't stopped scanning the names. I almost fell over. I pointed to his name. "Thank you. I'm doing a pencil etching of his name. Someone requested it on our website," she said. Talk about a coincidence. It's a small world, whatever. But it was an amazing happenstance. Quote, "John was a Medal of Honor recipient," I told her. She immediately checked her list, nodding her head, and said that was so. Quote, "Thank you for what you're doing," I told her and turned away to continue my walk, happy in spite of the fact it was cold, raining, and the cherry blossoms had not yet exploded. There were those, other than me, who would not let my brothers be forgotten. So, the book is called What Now, Lieutenant? And it's an interesting read because I would tell you that Butch Neal is, he's a smart guy, but he comes from very, 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 very normal stock in whole Massachusetts. He's a Hullian. And so he's affected by good people in his life, starting with his uncle when he got, you know, sent away from home. And his uncle was, he said, just the kind of person that he needed in his life. And then he's obviously been incredibly impacted by the events of 31 March 1967. At a place called, that's now called Gitlin's Corner, south-southwest of Compton and north of Camp Carroll. And so, it's an interesting book. It's an interesting book, and he's a smart guy who pays attention, keeps his head in the game, and isn't afraid to stand his ground and speak his mind. And the other thing that it's interesting, it's fate, a little bit of fate. and a lot of talent. But you need to meet people that open doors for you. General Gray was on that staff of the 3rd Marine Division when the whole Gitlin's Corner thing happened. And he crosses paths with General Gray repeatedly in his career. And so, General Neal, be with us tomorrow. All right, we ought to commence the program here. It's only 7:55. You're going to hear from John Kelly here as we check the news this morning. And a lot of news there are. Probably the biggest news, I think, that most of us, if you've paid attention to Iraq over the decade, now going on our second decade, is the news that Muqtada al-Sadr is the leading vote getter as the Iraqis begin the process of electing a new president. All right, so after the election, the parties will be ranked. And then, like most of these nations that elect a prime minister, the parties then attempt to form a government and then a president pulled out of that. So we'll talk about that a little bit. Muqtada al-Sadr, nemesis of the United States. He's a Shiite cleric, radical type, controls powerful militias. So what is his agenda? I read a little bit this morning after I woke up, and I think his agenda would surprise you a little bit, because I think most Americans would, if you're familiar at all with Iraq and you hear that name, it's like, oh, that ain't good. So we'll talk about that. Email about the Scholastic Book Club. Nothing better than the shipment coming in, fresh new books. Although most of my military history came from used bookstores my mom would drag me to, I always got to pick out a few for myself. Reading way above my age, not sure how much I retained. Tagged AllMarineRadio.com on a Cheryl Atkinson Facebook post Sunday on her syndicated show. She did a segment on a Navy SEAL, son of Sergeant at Arms, that committed suicide after claiming PTSD and TBI issues. Pretty good scientific stuff demonstrated on the matter involving brain concussion caused by firing large bore and big boom stuff. Great shows last week. Stop whining. What was I whining about? I'm not generally a whiner. Let's see. So that's what we'll do today. We'll check the news here. And a lot of stuff, like I said, a lot of stuff going on. North Korea is still in the news over the weekend. China and United States rhetoric over trade war is being de-escalated, so not sure where that all sits. And then the events today around Israel. Approximately 50 Palestinians killed in what was entirely predictable, what had been brewing in terms of a confrontation along the border. And with today's opening of the American embassy in Jerusalem, you knew that something was going to happen. The amazing thing is, and this will give you this, you have to give credit to the Israeli securities. You know there are people that would have loved to have exploded something large in Jerusalem, and that has yet to happen today. So Jerusalem, what, about 8 hours in front of us? What is the current time in Jerusalem? Anybody know? Hold on. Current time. Current time in Jerusalem is 5:59 p.m. That would be 17:59 for all you military types. All right, so if it's 17:59, that means they're 10 hours ahead of us. Wow. All right, so the 10 hours, that's easy. We like that. So 10 hours ahead of us in Israel. So as evening approaches, so far, no large terrorist activity in Jerusalem, as of yet. So we'll talk about that. So this is dedicated to all you moms out there who allow your children to head into the Marine Corps and do that with great fear. your little baby, boy or girl, going off to a world that you've seen on TV, and you do so like my mom did, with a hug and a kiss, and a good luck, and then show up, and hopefully they pin your rank on you someday, and the next time you see him a few months later. So this is dedicated to all you moms out there who allow that and support it like my mom did. We do this first. I'm getting a little bit over my skis today. Breaking news for all you sports bettors out there. New Jersey has won a landmark ruling from the United States Supreme Court today, which could lead to many states legalizing betting on college and professional sports. The justices ruled 7-2 that a 25-year-old federal law that effectively prohibits sports betting outside of Nevada by forcing states to keep prohibitions on the books is unconstitutional. The ruling could set the stage for other states to expand legalizing gambling as a source of government revenue. You know what? How did that ever work? Think about it. How did that ever work? Yeah, only one state can do it, Nevada. Either I think any state can do it or no state can do it. I think that's the way it works, yes? Interesting. Justice Samuel Alito, a New Jersey native, wrote the court's opinion in the case. Justices Ruth Ginsburg, Bader Ginsburg, and Sonia Sotomayor dissented. It was a victory for the state's recently departed Governor Chris Christie, who challenged the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, passed by Congress in 1992, to preserve the integrity of the nation's most popular sports. He and other proponents sought the ruling in order to help the state's ailing casinos and racetracks. Interesting. It was a defeat for the National College Athletic Association and four major professional sports leagues, baseball, football, basketball, and hockey, that had successfully blocked New Jersey and lower courts. Congress can regulate sports gambling directly, but if it elects not to do so, each state is free to act on its own, Alito said. Our job is to interpret the law Congress has enacted and decide whether it's consistent with the Constitution. This law is not. The court's action could jumpstart action in Congress to pass legislation calling for federal regulations of sports betting, something the sports leagues would prefer over separate rules from state to state. So, interesting. All right, now, this is dedicated to all you moms out there.
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
Let me be clear. As hard as the last 16 years have been on our military, no enemy in the field has done more to harm the readiness of the U.S. military than the combined impact of the Budget Control Act's defense spending cuts, worsened by us operating in 9 of the last 10 years under continuing resolutions, wasting copious amounts of precious taxpayer dollars. If you don't get the resources, my closing words, then your strategy is nothing more than a hallucination, because without the resources, there's just so much brave young men and women can do.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Yeah. Oh man, that's awesome. Yeah, here's the keeping all those monkeys in a cage. All right, we'll check the weather. 66 degrees in Quantico right now. Happy Mother's Day to my daughter-in-law, Susie, who lives in Quantico right now. Cloudy and 82 at Camp Lejeune. Granbury, Texas, cloudy and 81. Gunner's still not out of his headache stuff. Evidently, the Botox, something's not right. So, I'll keep you posted on that. 52 degrees right now under cloudy skies in Big Timber, Montana. 29 Palms, 64 degrees under sunny sky. Camp Pendleton, as we get to the coast, sun and 58. Okinawa, clear dark and 77. Marcia, clear dark, 88. Actually, they have some clouds. Home of All Marine Radio, cloudy, 59 degrees. looking for a high today of 69. Tomorrow, 69. And then on Wednesday, 68. Now, what's up with that? Why are we not in the 70s in May? Global warming. That's right. I knew you were going to say it. I figured I'd beat you to the punch. Okay, we're going to take a break. We come back. I'm going to go get my book, okay? I got to find the book my mom gave me. I'll give you the title of it. It's about the Civil War. Maps. But it's where I got. It's where I became a map freak. So don't touch that dial. Omring Radio continues on a Monday.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It'll be kind of like being a pilot. You'll come out of college and you want a cyber guarantee, and we'll give you a cyber guarantee.
Great.
And then if you make it through the school, then you'll get qualified, and that's what you'll go do. If you don't, then we'll
room in the grunt.
Make you an infantry officer.
Worked okay for you and
worked
me.
Out for so. You. Of course, everyone knows that the most intelligent, handsome people on the earth are infantry officers.
As this would convey.
Exhibit A and B.
That's right.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. Then you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. It wasn't my cake and eat it too. It wasn't it both ways. Fame made me a balloon. Cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. It was confusing. Cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee, a blue sleeve, abuse ink. Use it as a tool when I blew steam. Woo! Hit the lottery, ooh wee. But with what I gave up to get was bittersweet. It was like winning a used me. I'm blinded cause I think I'm getting so huge I need a shrink. I'm beginning to lose sleep. One sheep, two sheep, going cuckoo and kooky is cool key. But I'm actually weirder than you think. Cause
I'm friends with the monster.
much of a poet, but I know somebody once told me to seize the moment and don't squander it, cause you never know when it all could be over tomorrow, so I keep conjuring.
Sometimes I wonder where these thoughts ponder.
Yeah, ponder it, do you want? It's no wonder you're losing your mind the way you want.
I think you've been wandering off down yonder and stumbled on to Japan Quadrant, cause I need an interventionist to intervene between me and this monster and save me from myself and all this conflict, cause of everything that I love killing me and I can't conquer it. My OCD's talking me in the head, keep knocking, nobody's home, I'm sleepwalking, I'm just relaying with the voice of my head saying, don't shoot the messenger, I'm just
friends with the
Okay, if you've learned anything from listening to Allmarine Radio, you know that when the music plays that long, something bad happens. That's right. And rest assured it did. No, I can't find my book. So I dismantle the garage. I didn't dismantle it. I will, though. So I can't find my book. Yeah. I can't. My bothers now. I'm genuinely upset by it. So, I can't tell you how many. How many emails I get from the VA. VA celebrates the start of Nurses Week. VA expands telehealth by allowing healthcare providers to treat patients across state lines. VA nurse and formerly homeless veteran. For every bad thing you hear that goes on, there are good things. Yeah, the VA. The VA all on it. So we'll check some Marine headlines. And then I want to play some audio from General Kelly last week. The Alhambra Theater. That's right. Pretty cool. It was a big theater in Sacramento, California, just so everybody knows. Top Marine Corps stories of the day. U.S. military suspends two special operations members. In Africa. The U.S. military says the head of Special Operations Command Africa has suspended a regional commander and an enlisted advisor over alleged misconduct and sent them back to the United States. No details are given. Spokeswoman Lieutenant Jackie Maxwell with Naval Special Warfare Group 2 tells the Associated Press that the suspended personnel were assigned to an East Coast based unit and the Naval Special Warfare and Naval Criminal Investigative Service are investigating. However, other news outlets reported that two senior Navy SEAL leaders were sent stateside pending a sexual assault and a harassment investigation. One of the senior leaders is accused of inappropriately touching a female service member. So you got that going on this morning. Another report, Special Operation Marines under scrutiny along with Navy SEALs in a Green Beret's death. Now this, the story is been in the news for probably the last 6 months. For nearly a year, the investigation into the ongoing strangulation death of a Green Beret deployed to Africa centered around two Navy SEALs he lived with at the time of his death. But new reports indicate that at least two Marines may have been present during the alleged incident. NBC News reported this week that five defense officials who were not identified by name in the news report confirmed that the forensic evidence indicates that two Marines with Marine Special Operations Command may have been present on the night or the early morning of Army Staff Sergeant Logan Melger's death in June of 2017. The military is now investigating whether Marines played a role in Melger's death or the possibility of a cover-up that occurred afterwards. Multiple reports have noted that the investigation, originally conducted by the Army CID but later transferred to NCIS, included statements from SEAL Team 6 members, Petty Officer Anthony DeDolph and Chief Petty Officer Adam Cranston Matthew, that claimed that they wanted to get back at Melger for snubbing them on the way to a party. The two claimed that they ambushed Melger in his room in rough horseplay, with DeDolph choking him out. But their stories allegedly changed multiple times as the investigation progressed. The SEALs first, it's that incident, okay? They said he was drunk. His wife reportedly told investigators he never drinks. So anyway, this story, and what it, the essence of the story was that he had found evidence that the SEALs were stealing money. He then emailed his wife as he neared the end of his deployment, saying that he had a bad feeling about some of the troops that he was working with. Right, and the story goes that he allegedly discovered the SEALs were skimming cash from their operational funds used for payouts to informants, okay? Something that allegedly has been going on for a long time. So, again, I tell you that the SEAL community has major, major issues, and that's no joke. It has huge, huge issues. It doesn't seem like other communities have this for whatever reason. Or at least doesn't have it in the quantities that it seems like the SEALs have them. Other story that we talked about briefly and kind of raised an eyebrow when it happened, but it merits some discussion. Marines won't be breaking rocks at the Marine Corps' new correctional unit. Marine Corps is doing an experiment in 3MEF, right, out on Okinawa. It's a correctional custody unit. We used to have these in the Marine Corps. You sent guys there who needed to be motivated, okay, not NJP'd, but they needed to go back to boot camp and be remediated. So you could either process them out or they could go to CC. Now there was discussion when this it was stood up about how would there be hard labor there, and that is nothing more than making big rocks, little rocks, right? Marine Corps officials put the kibosh on the rock breaking after the new correctional unit's grand opening was delayed several months pending a review by senior officers. Quote, a notable difference in CCU 2.0 is the rock-breaking exercise, for which the original correctional custody unit was known, will not be done. Instead, the physical fitness program features will training exercises and combat conditioning regularly conducted by Marine units on a daily basis. So, everybody got it right, right? Everybody got it right. The new correctional unit offers a way for commanders to retain junior Marines who otherwise would have been separated over various minor misconduct. With a dedicated staff who are eager to guide and mentor CCU 2.0 will provide Marines the opportunity to navigate back to true north in order to serve as productive teammates, make better personal and professional life decisions, and successfully complete their initial enlistment. The article goes on. Our primary job is mentorship, said Sergeant Dustin Owens, a senior watch stander at the CCU. I'm going to accept them like they are my Marines because for that 30-day period, they are. I'm going to have a vested interest in their future success. The new curriculum is designed to reinstill the values and high standards. So, again, this is all designed to keep them from dropping out of the Marine Corps, keep them from getting other than honorable, dishonorable discharges. So another tool. But what got everybody's attention was a picture of rock breaking that seemed to be occurring someplace in the Marine Corps. So much discussion about that. You'll all be relieved to know that the little pumpkins won't be doing that. Here's another thing that's rolling around, and this email kind of brings it up, so I'll talk about it. Hey, Mac. I saw over the weekend that the North Koreans are going to make a big deal out of closing the mountain they use for their nuclear blasting. Do you think it's just bullshit? Evidently, they've blown the mountain up. It's collapsing. They've got to build another one anyway. Do you think this is just garbage? It looks like garbage to me. You know what? I think that maybe they're delaying the opening of a new facility or the breaking ground on a new facility. Or maybe they already have a second facility. And so maybe this is just another overture and they're going to see what comes of the negotiations. In terms of what is, because they could do whatever they want. If they decide to rebuff the United States, they can go back to, you know, to what they want to do. They can go back to doing that. So, another big question, how do you begin to take a country that's so far out of the norm, right? How do you take a country like that and bring it into the 20th century so you can bring it into the 21st century? How do you begin to do that? That's a relatively large undertaking. However, so that dance is going on. And so we'll see what happens. I had the same thought, though. There was something in my head. I took a class on Latin American history when I was in junior college. One of the best classes I ever took because the teacher was great. And he talked about fruit companies, Continental Can Company, I want to say United Fruit, big fruit company. Dole is part of that, okay? You would know it by Dole, but they operate by different, by other different names. So Continental Can Company is a big corporation. Dole is one piece of it, or at one point, I guess, was one piece of it. Anyway, one of the things that he said that caused trouble was they no longer had the support to continue the policies that they had used for years to do business down there. And instead of seeing that and being forward-looking, these companies attempted to hold on to that way of doing business in spite of, you know, the world changing around them, and they were ultimately thrown out of those countries. So it reminds me, this reminds me of that a little bit, all right? Can't use it anymore. Times are changing. So instead of holding on to it, you know, we'll move on. Now, what does moving on mean? Good question. Does it mean beginning excavation on a second point? Possibly. Does it mean a treaty with the United States? You know, who knows? So, again, I think it is, it's dysfunctional, so they have to close it down anyway. They're going to invite Western media in to watch the destruction and the dismantling of it. Oh, by the way, the mountain was falling down. Oh, by the way, the mountain was falling down. So I wasn't overly impressed, to be honest with you. It's an interesting gesture, and I'm sure it'll be an interesting experience for the people that go ahead and participate. But beyond that, and, you know, which will be in itself, that many media members going to cover it and their interaction with the Korean people, how does it begin to control that? Good question. So, that going on. Top five early bird stories. When we come back, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
I had a Vietnam vest on me one time.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage, in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage. Yeah.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Can you imagine, were you a Vietnam veteran, and you came home, and they told you to take your uniform off and don't talk about it and just forget about it?
I can't even imagine. I have so much respect for those guys.
My book is still unlocated. Where did it go, man? Now, trust me, this kind of stuff derails my entire day. Watching a video right now of people burning tires. If you, some of them are dressed as women, watch how the people dressed as women, watch how they run when they pick up tires and throw them. They run a lot like men do. So, again, one of the tricks of the trade, dress up as a woman. Text message from Dave in Vacaville. Good morning, Mac. Did you receive the link I emailed you about Sebastian Younger's documentary, The Last Patrol? Again, I don't know if you've already viewed it, but I thought you'd be interested. Have a great day. Thea, I did. And you can get it on... Is it on... Can you get it on Netflix? Oh, The Battle of the Chosen. I think Younger... I did get the link. I think that's only on HBO Pay or something like that. I don't have that. So if it's on Netflix, I'll watch it. I have heard of it. We had Sebastian Younger on. He's written a book called Tribe. Yeah, imagine that. Listens to Allman Radio, then writes a book. What a joke. So, nah, he's a good dude. He came on and talked about... one of the things he talks about, I would encourage you to check out the book called Tribe. But one of the reasons he said that Native Americans didn't have a whole lot of post-traumatic stress among warriors was, and like I don't know how you document that, but evidently that's the contention, was that they were welcomed back into their society, right, when they came home. You know, they go and fight, and they came home. They were welcome back, you know, as honored members of their tribe. My reviews of the Chosin documentary coming in from Montana, he says it was okay. I may have already watched it. I enjoy, you know what, I take various things. One, I look, is there a video that I've never seen? I don't know if it's the one that I watched within the last few months, but if it is, it had video of Chinese soldiers that I'd never seen. It's pretty, it's not gory, but, you know, their feet completely, you know, frostbitten, their face is all jacked up with frostbite. It's pretty gruesome in terms of, you know, how those guys got treated. They essentially got run down there, you know, and if they die, they died. Communism, not so concerned about collateral damage and troop welfare. Communism doesn't do it like that. I still am finishing up my book called The Sorrow of War by Bao Ninh, the Vietnamese guy. Man, let me just tell you, you want to read a depressing book? Read about what it was like to be an NVA soldier. Shit almighty. Yeah. So if you ever want to dial it back when you're having too good of a day, it's called the sorrow of war. Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, he leaves North Vietnam for that parade. 500 leave, 5 come back. Yeah, 5. Not 50, okay? Not 150, not 200, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. So, anyway. If you have any other things to pass on, I'll post those links on the read board. But Younger, you know, his premise of writing the book Tribe was that, you know, why do we have a higher rate of post-traumatic stress, or what can we do about it in the future? And it's like, well, your society needs to welcome you back. And my point was, he said, look, Mac, you're fostering staying separate. I said, what do you mean? He said, look, you now have a radio station devoted to this subgroup. We need you back in the general population. I said, you don't want us back, though. You don't like us. You're kind of scared of us. And he said, because we don't know you. And I said, so what do you want us to do? Go and knock your door down? You're supposed to welcome us. We're the warriors of our country. But people don't want to deal with us. Ask veterans about interviewing with somebody who's not a veteran when they start asking you, you know, about your experiences. Ask them what they say. Nothing. Oh no, you know, I was there. You know, I did my job, but that was about it. They did. You, what? Why? Because they won't hire you. They won't hire you. And I don't care what it says on their website. They won't hire you. So anyway, kind of interesting. Kind of interesting. The top 5 stories in Early Bird. Number 1, this retired Army Lieutenant Colonel got a pretty big promotion in another country's military. What? That's not a bad thing, though. So now what do we got? We got somebody there at a relatively high position that used to be in our employ. That's not a bad thing, is it? I don't think it's a bad thing. This retired Army Lieutenant Colonel got a pretty big promotion. Here's the story. A retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel got a big promotion after he went to work for the United Arab Emirates, where he now heads the nation's Joint Aviation Command and National Search and Rescue Center as a major general. Steve Tumajan retired as an Army Lieutenant Colonel in 2007, according to a recent report on BuzzFeed. At some point, he went to work for the UAE in a video posted on the Department of Defense's photo and video sharing website. While with his UAE soldier at the National Training Center at Fort Irwin, California, he says, I'm a major general for the United Arab Emirates. It gets better. Between stints in the Army and becoming a 2-star for the UAE, Tumajan worked as an agent for the Clarksville, Tennessee-based Breast Enhancement Company, called Breast Wishes Incorporated. I'm not making this up, I swear to God. Yet in a child custody hearing in Florida and in messages to BuzzFeed, Tumajan denies being in the UAE military. Quote, I hold the duty, rank, and responsibilities of a major general, he testified. I'm not currently in their armed forces. In the messages, Tumajan said he is a civilian contractor who was asked to form the UAE Joint Aviation Command and that UAE and that UAE forces fighting in Yemen are not under his command. He also claims his work has been authorized by the U.S. government. When reached for comment on the case, with the arrangement relative to Tumijan's arrangement with the UAE and whether it has any conflict with his military retirement status, an army official said, quote, due to an ongoing investigation, we cannot speak to Stephen Tumijan's case. Army official told BuzzFeed they're reviewing the case. State Department official told the website they cannot discuss specifics. There you have it. Major General. Story number two, U.S. military suspends two special operations members in Africa. We've already talked about that. Number three, Air Force deployed mysterious drone to Afghanistan to catch terrorists planting roadside bombs. How awesome is that? So we're all worried about drones, right? We're all worried about drones and what they're going to do. But you know what drones allow us to do? It allows us to fly up and down a road for a long time. And check it out. Interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Story number four from the Navy Times. Truman's strike group is pummeling ISIS in Syria. So, Air Force deploys mysterious drone to Afghanistan. What are you talking about? Data from an investigation spearheaded by Defense News sister brand Military Times revealed that an experimental homegrown reconnaissance drone called Silver Fang was deployed by the Air Force to Afghanistan during mid-2010. Very little information about Silver Fang unmanned aerial system is available online, but it emerged within data on aviation mishaps obtained by Military Times, painting a fascinating portrait of a little-known technology and revealing for the first time the extent of Silver Fang testing in Afghanistan. Silver Fang was an Air Force research laboratory program that provided intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capabilities on a Tier 2 runway-independent small unmanned aerial system, said Daryl Mayer, a spokesman for Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, where AFRL is located. AFRL, that's the Armed Forces Research Laboratory acronym. A photo of the aircraft featured in the August 25 AFRL presentation showed a fixed-wing rail launch plane with a sensor ball attached at the aft of the aircraft. And then there's a slide. Whoa. So it's a drone story. If you've been waiting for a story about the Silver Fang, then this says your name. This has your name all over it. We have things called aerostats. They're big balloons. There's some crazy stuff. When the balloons get going, it's when they don't come down in time, when the wind picks up, right, then we're off cross-country chases, man, trying to get to the camera. Get to the camera on the aerostat. Do it now. We can't see. That's why it had to come down. It doesn't matter. Where is it? We don't know. It went that way. Go look for it. And then, sure enough, we find it. Yep. We find a but. If the Afghans get to it, they can cannibalize something faster than you can shake a stick at. We had some kind of drone, some kind of ISR platform crash in our AO, and we're off looking for it. Last saw it here, blah, 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 civilian reports this. By the time we got to it, they had already pulled the wings off and were using that as a bridge, and they had the camera pod, and they stuffed that down a well so that they could sell it. And this is in the space of not too long a period of time. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We eventually recovered all of it, because whenever somebody does something, somebody's always out to get them. So when you talk to the neighbors, they're like, yeah, don't tell them we spoke to you, but check in the adjacent compound that's abandoned. They were in there, and you should also check in the well. Inshallah, Allah's will. Yeah, Allah's will. We're all about it. The then you go yoke them up. Yeah, they get after each other. Love that. Love those little, kind of like the disagreement Rand Paul had with that guy who came over and cold cocked him when he was on his riding lawnmower. Yeah. What was that about? Have we ever got to the bottom of that? The, Fox is reporting North Korea needs U.S. security assurances to get a nuclear arms deal. What do you want? Look, we haven't invaded you forever. Like, we have no... I shouldn't say this, but I'll think it out loud. We've learned our lesson about overtaking shithole countries. It's a bad business, okay? We want no part of your country. We'll leave you be. Okay? Just don't threaten to blow up the whole planet and all the rest of that stuff. What do you want us to sign? Put it in front of us. We don't want any part of it. How about that? We want nothing that you have. That's an easy one. All right, so you want us to sign the non-aggression pact? We'll do that. Just make it verifiable. Just allow us to do that. Look, we'll ship you any surface food we have. We'll ship it to you. Right? We could dump it in North Korea. Not going to affect the market. It's a black hole, right? They're not even part of it. Yeah. We have extra soybeans. You like soybeans? I don't even know what a soybean is. All right. Well, you're going to figure it out. And then we'll send you a bunch of recipes with soybeans. And we'll also send you fertilizer so you can stop fertilizing your crops with human waste, okay? That's just so bad. Stop doing that yesterday, okay? So, yeah, if that's all he wants, we can do that. All right. Truman Strike Group pummeling ISIS. That's right, pummeling. Aircraft launched from the aircraft carrier Harry S. Truman have been carrying out strikes against ISIS targets in Syria for a little over a week now, pummeling the remaining Daesh strongholds in the middle Euphrates River Valley in support of Operation Inherent Resolve. Accompanying the carrier are the destroyers Fort Sherman, Bulkeley, Arleigh Burke, the ship, not the class. Arleigh Burke. What is Bulkeley? What the hell is that? Is that named after a city? Bulkeley? USS Bulkeley. I don't understand, and if somebody knows out there, oh, here's a picture of it. USS Bulkeley is an Arleigh Burke-class destroyer in the United States Navy. She is named for Medal of Honor recipient Vice Admiral John D. Bulkeley. The ship is a 34th. All right, let's find out about him. What did he do? Medal of Honor. Got to find out about him. Vice Admiral. That's Lieutenant General, right? All right, we're on it. Hold on. Let me get to the bottom of this, and then we'll continue checking the news. John Duncan Bulk Ely was a vice admiral in the United States Navy, was one of the most decorated naval officers. Bulk Ely received the Medal of Honor for actions in the Pacific Theater during World War II. Born August 19th, 1911, in New York City, New York. Died April 6th, 1996, Silver Spring, Maryland. Education, Hackettstown High School. Buried, Arlington National Cemetery, Arlington, Virginia. Years of service, 1933 to 1988. 55 years? Huh? Come on. All right, got to read about him. Who is this guy? Got a Navy Cross, too. He was also a PT boat skipper who evacuated General Douglas MacArthur from Corregidor in the Philippines and commanded at the Battle of Lae Chaotat. Chaotat? Never heard of it. The United States Navy named an Arleigh Burke-class guided missile destroyer after him, commissioned in 2001. Okay. In 1933, he graduated from the United States Naval Academy. At the dawn of World War II, he was a lieutenant in command of Motor Torpedo Boat Squadron 3, a Philippine-based detachment of Motor Torpedo Squadron 6. I'm sorry, of 6 motor torpedo boats. He hit his stride as a daring, resourceful, and courageous leader. Picked up General Douglas MacArthur's family and his immediate staff, who had been ordered to free the Philippines, and took them aboard PT-41 and other 77-foot motorboats over a 600 nautical mile over open oceans, arriving in Mindanao. MacArthur said, "You have taken me out of the jaws of death. I shall never forget it." Bulkeley earned many of his array of decorations while in command of that squadron and a subsequent one. He was evacuated to Australia by B-17 in the final days of the campaign. In September 1942, while in the States helping to raise war bonds as a lieutenant commander, he met former ambassador to Britain Joe Kennedy at New York Plaza Hotel. Shortly after, was instrumental in recruiting Lieutenant John F. Kennedy into the Navy's Motor Torpedo Training Center in Melville, Rhode Island. Kennedy's heroic captaining of PT-109 would help launch his first campaign into Congress. In 1944, he took part in the Normandy invasion. Bulkeley led torpedo boats and minesweepers in clearing of the lanes to Utah Beach, keeping German E-boats from attacking the landing ships along the Mason Line, and picking up wounded sailors from sinking minesweepers USS Tide, destroyer escort USS Rich, and destroyer USS Corey. As invasion operations wound down, he received command of his first large ship, the destroyer USS Endicott. 1 month after D-Day, he came to the aid of 2 British gunboats under attack by 2 German corvettes. Bulkeley's vessel's largest gun was smaller than the guns of the German ship. After days of fighting, Bulkeley only had 1 working gun on his ship, charging in with only 1 gun working. He engaged both enemy vessels at point-blank range, sinking both. Afterwards, Bulkeley rescued the British sailors in the water, then rescued many of the German sailors as well. When asked, he explained, "What else could I do? You engage, you fight, you win. That is the reputation of the Navy then and in the future." Whoa. How about that shit? Again, the luck of combat. Okay? The luck of combat. Sometimes God wants to see you, sometimes he doesn't. He did retire in 1988 after 55 years of service. Holy shit. 55. So I guess 4 of them are at the Naval Academy, right? So even 51? Yikes. He retired from active duty in 1975. However, he was recalled to active duty in a retired retained status in order to serve as the commander of the Navy's Board of Inspection and Survey, which conducts inspections and surveys of U.S. vessels before their commissioning and deployment. He retired for good in 1988. That's amazing. Okay, his awards. Navy Cross, Medal of Honor, Navy Cross, Distinguished Service Cross. That's the Army's, right? Navy Distinguished Service Medal, Silver Star, Purple Heart, Combat Action Ribbon with two gold stars, Navy Presidential Unit, Presidential Unit Citation, Army Presidential Unit Citation, China Service Medal. All right, let me read you his Medal of Honor citation. See ya? How cool is this? I love this kind of stuff. I never heard of the guy. For extraordinary heroism, distinguished service, and conspicuous gallantry above and beyond the call of duty as commander of Motor Torpedo Boat Squadron 3, in Philippine waters during the period 7 December 1941 to 10 April 1942. The remarkable achievement of Lieutenant Commander Bull Cayley's command in damaging or destroying a notable number of Japanese enemy planes, surface combatants, and merchant ships, and in dispersing landing parties and land-based enemy forces during the 4 months and 8 days of operations without benefit of repairs, overhaul, or maintenance facilities for his squadron, is believed to be without precedent in this type of warfare. His dynamic forcefulness and daring in offensive action, his brilliantly planned and skillfully executed, supplemented by a unique resourcefulness and ingenuity, characterized him as an outstanding leader of men and a gallant and intrepid seaman. These qualities, coupled with a complete disregard for his own personal safety, reflect great credit upon himself and the naval service. That's his Medal of Honor? So what does that mean? They gave him the Medal of Honor for moving MacArthur, and this is just what they cited in the award? That's what it sounds like to me. I think, wasn't General MacArthur awarded the Medal of Honor as well? He's been portrayed in a movie. Twice. Robert Montgomery played Motor Torpedo Squadron Commander T. Lieutenant Brickley, not T, Lieutenant Brickley, based on Bull Cayley. In the 1945 movie, They Were Expendable, John Ford, assisted by Montgomery, directed. The cast also includes John Wayne, Ward Bond, and the lovely Donna Reed. Love Donna Reed, okay? He was also depicted in the 1977 movie MacArthur by William Wellman Jr. during the evacuation of General MacArthur and his family from Corregidor. Interesting. I'm trying to see if they have his Navy Cross. Okay. All right. Well, that ships with the USS Harry S. Truman. So you got that going for you. AP's reporting Gaza health officials say a total of 52 Palestinians have been killed, more than 1,200 wounded by Israeli fire in Gaza. You knew it was coming. I'm not saying that you go down there messing around with them today. And what are you most interested in? Most interested in the video footage that goes around the world saying that we're being exploited by the Israelis. Yeah. And just like communist leaders, these leaders don't have any problem with running up the casualty toll because all they're really after is the video. Okay? You became the video. All right. So, yeah, the Harry Truman is overseas right now. Stand by. All right, Marine Corps stories. Okay, keep your eye on the whole Africa thing, okay? Story in Air Force Times. Following Niger ambush, Pentagon promises more air support for Africa. Okay, so watch the stories that come out about that. People that I've spoke to say that, you know, look, we've been helping there, and, you know, we know what we do in other parts of the world, and so our special forces. Now, special forces, all special forces guys are not door kickers and all that kind of stuff. Green Berets train other militaries, all right, called special forces under the broad umbrella, but they're not direct action guys for the most part. Okay. Can they fight? Will they fight? Yeah, if they have to. But that's not what they're sent out there to do. And supposedly, there is more of this that has happened, but we only paid a price in this case. I want to read a little bit about what Mike Pompeo said. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Sunday that the United States will need to provide security assurances to North Korea's Kim Jong-un if the adversaries are to reach a nuclear deal, describing the stakes of Donald Trump's visit with Kim. Quote, from John Bolton, the implementation of the decision means getting rid of all nuclear weapons, dismantling them, taking them to Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Bolton said in an interview with ABC. It means getting rid of the uranium enrichment and the plutonium processing capabilities. Adding that the process would also need to address North Korea's ballistic missile. Quote, I don't think anybody believes you're going to sign the complete ending of the nuclear program in one day, but we are also very much interested in operationalizing the commitment as quickly as possible. Bolton was, he made the circuit yesterday. All right, let's take a break, and we'll hear from John Bolton. He had interesting things to say yesterday, so we'll tee John Bolton up. So, more of Al-Marin Radio on a Monday coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.